Bye.
Welcome back to Ag Day, presented by Skiles Electric on WILO, Boom 1027, and Hoosierland TV. It's also brought to you by the Community Foundation of Howard and Clinton Counties, the Farmers Bank, Wampler Services Incorporated, Rossville Consolidated School District, Drago, Indiana, and First Farmers Bank and Trust. If you're watching on Hoosierland TV, you can see that we've managed to tie him to his chair and keep him here. Austin Pearson, climatologist for Purdue University and Indiana State Climate Office. And Austin, we were talking about the growing seasons and how everything is changing, and talking about the droughts that we're in. And you just, off air, you just said you think we'll be okay agriculturally, but you're worried about everything else. The water table's down deep. I'm thinking of people who have shallow wells. If they haven't already had to dig a new one, I mean, that could be detrimental for residential areas.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting into the wettest time of the year for us, and I think looking at the Climate Prediction Center outlooks and for precipitation, I think pretty much all through spring we're looking at elevated chances for above normal precipitation. With the rain events and stuff that we have had in the near term, I think soil moisture, especially up to the upper profile, has rebounded. My wife and I went over to Tipton the other night for dinner at the Pizza Shack, and noticed that there was a farmer out working ground. And so I think that was probably pretty early for that, but that is happening. Whatever moisture that we have received, that topsoil has really soaked up quite a bit of it. But we just haven't really seen that moisture penetrate too much deep into the soil. And so if you're digging for fence posts, putting tile in or anything like that, you look deep and there's not a lot of moisture. And so that's one of the concerns that I have, moving forward. But if we keep getting these timely rains early in the season, and that forecast or outlook does look like it's going to come into play, I think we'll be okay. So it's the big thing, though, like, we have to get at least our normal precipitation to help. We got more than normal precipitation over the last 3 weeks. So fortunate in that standpoint, we got to keep that coming, though. And I think the way the forecast looks, I think we're going to keep doing that. At one point this winter, we've been in a La Nina all winter, and it hasn't really acted like a La Nina per se. Typically have wetter than normal conditions, and so I lost a bit of faith in some of the Climate Prediction Center outlooks, and so I've gained a little bit of confidence back with them for at least this spring, and so I think we'll be okay moving forward. I think we're going to just slowly chip ourselves out of the drought moving into the near term, and kind of see how that rolls going into the rest of the spring and summer.
How far out can you look at? And I know it's anybody's guess. Mother Nature can have a migraine or something and change her mind. It was what she's going to do for us. But how far out can you look and use for your estimations and see how those patterns are developing?
Yeah, so when you look at the Climate Prediction Center, they produce outlooks for 6 to 10, 8 to 14, 1 month, and they also do seasonal outlooks, so that would be your 3 month. And so we're looking at, I think, March, April, May, so the spring time frame, we can see that out. And what those do is that they're just basically coming up with a confidence forecast on how much confidence they have in above normal or below normal precipitation, or above normal or below normal temperatures. And so you can utilize that to make adjustments to crops and what you're planning to do for the spring or summer. But when you're looking at actual precipitation forecasts, it's very difficult to nail a precipitation forecast, more than 3 or 4 days out. You can get general trends in the models. You can see general areas where you may see some precipitation that will fall. But once you start getting closer to that period, closer to current time, you're going to have a better grasp on on what's going to happen. And when you're looking at snow or stuff like that, that's a whole nother ball game when you start looking at that and whether the atmosphere is cold enough for certain types of snows and the moisture content that's come from that. And so that can be a challenge there as well. You know, slight shifts in tracks can make or break snowstorms, stuff like that, that we've seen pretty much all winter long. So, yeah.
So what are your models showing, you know, for that confidence of above or below temperature and precipitation here as we press on into hopefully a successful planting season in the coming weeks?
Yeah, so they aren't my models. I will 100%
right.
Say they're not mine.
The models you use.
Not going to take credit for them, but we rely heavily on the Climate Prediction Center. It's cpc.nsep.noaa.gov. And you can just type in Climate Prediction Center at Google, and we'll talk about another resource that you can go grab them from here soon. But the 6 to 10-day temperature outlook is showing elevated chances for above normal temperatures. So that would be March 23rd through 27th. So that'll round us out for that latter part of the mark of the month. And so here in this area, we're looking at greater than 30% chance of above normal temperatures. Okay, and looking at those combined with that, March 23rd through 27th, we have greater than 30% chance of above normal precipitation for the northern half of the state. And so that's not telling us how far above or below we're looking at. We're just looking at probabilities. 8 to 14 day, you know, that March 25th through the 31st, really taking us to the end of the month there, we're looking at a higher chance, 40 to 50% chance of above normal temperatures. And with that, we're also seeing a greater than 30% chance of above normal precipitation. Okay. So, you know, warmer and wetter is what that trend is saying. Now, it doesn't mean we can't have these cold snaps that we're dealing with currently, right? It's miserable outside the last couple of days. But overall, if you start to average things out, we're going to have a lot of back and forths. It's going to be a roller coaster of a spring, pretty typical what we deal with. The bigger picture, you know, looking at that three-month outlook for the March, April, May time frame, the models, the jet stream is going to be more zonal, moving from west to east across the U.S., and there's going to be a lot of dips back and forth for those areas. The Climate Prediction Center has equal chances of above normal or below normal equal chances of above normal or below normal temperatures. So there's not quite a firm grasp on, you know, exactly what's going to happen. What to me, it just tells me that it's going to be back and forth quite a bit over this year. And I do know that there's some concern across the northern part of the state for late frosts this spring. So if we do get a warm spell, you know, keeping an eye out on those forecasts, you know, there could be some replants as a result of frost damage to beans. We've seen that. We've dealt with that. And it seems like we almost always get a Mother's Day freeze event that happens, right? So just another thing to keep an eye on. But the good promising thing that I see here is that there's a greater than 30% chance of above normal precipitation for that March, April, May time frame. So continue pulling ourselves out of drought. I don't know that it's going to be a washout of a spring. I wouldn't say that. So there's just some things to talk about with that. But recently, I don't know, you might want to hold on to your pets because it's like really windy outside and just not able to keep your soil in one spot, right? A lot of blowing soil across the state. So
as we are looking forward here, you know, the state climate office being housed at Purdue now is wonderful. Along with the Midwest Regional Climate Center, and you've spent a lot of time and your team building out some fantastic tools for producers and everyone the like to access, to find all of this data and all this information that you're speaking to, plus many more things that people would like to know information about. You guys have some great tools available, and as our time is rounding out, let's talk a little bit about some of those tools and how farmers can access them and use them.
Yeah, so while Eric was grilling me on climate change and all those different things here earlier, I will say that is a very, very, very small part of what I actually do. And so a lot of what I do is I take weather data and put them into resources and tools for people to be able to make decisions. And one of those big stakeholders is the ag industry. And so we work a lot with agronomists. We've worked with farmers and developing products that help them understand the typical conditions for soil temperatures for a particular area. When the temperatures typically warm above 50 degrees and stay above 50 degrees, and what time of year that typically happens. One of the big tools that we've been working on this last year, it was our Ag Climate Dashboard that we've got at the MRCC. So if you go to mrcc.purdue.edu, we received funding from the United Soybean Board. We've been working on a multi-year project with them. And one of the things, we had some workshops that, you know, farmers were saying is that they got bookmarks everywhere. And, you know, 100 different bookmarks. They've got 5 or 6 different weather apps on their phones. What do you use? What do you trust? What do you go through all that stuff? And I will say that it's much more than the data that we provide. It's the value-added resources that farmers can utilize. And so if you go to the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, mrcc.purdue.edu, you will see the Ag Climate Dashboard on the homepage. It's the furthest card, the third card from the right. And you'll have information on there about recent conditions. So you'll see maps, charts, summaries of recent temperature, precipitation, notable events across the Midwest and the Corn Belt. You can also look at drought, rainfall, soil temperatures, and moisture across the current locations. Look at forecasts. And so one of the things that I did was I built in the National Weather Service forecast. So if you click on the forecast tab, it'll automatically pull your location, and it'll give you the 7-day forecast for your particular area. And then those Climate Prediction Center outlooks that we were talking about earlier, you can mouse over and click on CPC outlooks, and you're going to get them right here in this one location. And so you'll have your different outlooks that are available there. And then when you start looking at your ENSO status, the El Nino Southern Oscillation, you can get that information from this portal. You can get climatologies. So, you know, climatologies are a good thing for us to look at how conditions have varied over the past. And so we've got a freeze date tool that was developed in partnership with the U.S. Department of Ag Climate Midwest Climate Hub. And so we have that information there where you can look at trends in freeze dates and growing seasons, typically see when the latest first fall or last spring freeze is for your location. You can also look at freeze probabilities based on your current dates and location. We've got heat index and wind chill climatologies. That soil temperature climatology that I was talking about is also within this product. So you can look at dates when soils warm above or cool below your chosen threshold. So you can look at different thresholds for that. There's other products and tools that are available. And if you remember 2019 when it was pretty wet, and you know a lot of producers ended up having to take prevent plant because it was mid-June and we didn't have corn crop in the ground. We looked at the corn growing degree day tool that is available on our website, and you can track the planting date. You look at your freeze date probabilities, and then estimate when that crop is going to be at silking or the reproductive phase or when it hits black layer. And in 2019, mid-June, we had to cut back pretty significantly on hybrid maturities just to get the crop in. So that was one of the things that was there. We've got pest and disease forecasting tools. Keystone guys were contacting us last spring about alfalfa weevil and looking at growing degree day accumulations and whether or not they should be treating or doing anything with those. We had tools in this that we could point them to. And then lastly, you know, you click on this and you look at the state resources. You can go down and you can get access to the Purdue Mesonet, and we'll talk probably about that more. Whatever you guys want to talk about it. Is now a good time?
Yeah, go ahead and hit on what the Mesonet is and what kind of data those stations are collecting.
Yeah, so the Purdue MesoNet is our statewide weather network that we maintain through the State Climate Office. We're looking at research grade calibrated instrumentation. We go out 3 times a year manually and clean the instrumentation, make sure they're working within spec. And then what we do with that data is it gets passed back into our Purdue MesoNet data hub. And so PurdueMesoNet.org, people can grab that and go to that online. I wouldn't recommend doing it on a mobile device because it's not a very good dashboard as of yet. We're making changes on that currently. But we're pulling in all kinds of data from those sites. So we've got temperatures at 3 different heights, or technically 4 different heights. We've got one up at 10 feet. We've got one at about 5 or about a meter high. And then we've got another one at 0.5 meter, and then the other one's at 2 meters. So looking at that for temperature inversions. So the D word, dicamba, that we've all talked about.
You're collecting temperatures at a lot more elevations than like an airport type data. Where a lot of our temperature information comes from is airports. These stations are collecting at several different elevations.
Yeah, yeah. So if you look at the Frankfurt Airport and you look at their temperature data, they're taking temperatures at 2 meters, the standard height for that. We're taking them at those 4 different heights, so that way we can tell whether a temperature inversion is present. So if you look at dicamba applications or spraying any type of pesticides in a temperature inversion, when you see fog, dew, anything like that that's present during those time frames, those smaller particles get suspended in the air and they stay there until the sun comes out, moves them off target with the wind, those types of things. So we're monitoring those. We can tell whether a temperature inversion is present on a specific site. We've got wind speed, wind direction. The important thing to note with these stations is that we are measuring those at 10 feet. If you look at the Frankfurt Airport or if you look at the Indianapolis International Airport, they're measuring those at 30 feet. Okay. It's a pretty big difference between there and boom height when you're looking at those when you're spraying. And so having that more ag-centric focus for this network is really kind of where we are with that. You know, wind speeds are typically calmer at the surface compared to 30 feet in the air. And so you may have an instance where the 30-foot wind measurements say you can't spray, and whereas those 10-foot measurements are the ones that you know, your equipment or farm equipment has, you can likely spray, just depending upon those scenarios. In addition to the wind speed and wind direction, we've got solar radiation, we've got humidity, we calculate dew point. The other things that we have are soil conditions. So we have soil moisture and soil temperature at 4 different depths. So 2-inch, 4-inch, 8, and 20 inches. And you can go grab those right now from PurdueMesoNet.org. And so I did that just before coming to the meeting. And the soil temperatures up at Junior Dunlap's farm, southwestern side of Howard County, Roosevelt area, 40 degrees is the current soil temperature, and that's under sod right there. So having that information, we've also got weather instruments for rain gauges, looking at rain accumulation over time. Now, we've got 15 stations across the state. The closest one to us here currently is in that southwestern Howard County area. We are hoping to have one station in every county in the next 5 to 10 years. So expanding the MesoNet, getting that available for producers. I had a meeting in Boone County last week, and an ag co-op is looking at buying a station for us and putting it in there. And so there's opportunities for that, and I saw you reach your hand for the mic. These aren't cheap weather stations, right? They're $35,000 for a station, plus installation of concrete and those types of things for that. We are looking at different mechanisms for mounting that in a particular area using ground screws and just drilling down deep into the soil. It's an option. But also, we have ongoing maintenance. You can install a station, and a year later, you got to replace the sensor because something had failed on it. You know, calibrations aren't cheap, and so maintaining those stations requires additional funds. And then the back-end side where you're taking the data, developing the tools, making the data available on the website for people to access, it takes people, and it takes computational resources. And so one of the things is that we're hoping is that we can get state buy-in The State Department of Agriculture, the Department of Natural Resources, they're all on board and hoping to help us get funding through the state line item somehow to help expand this network across the state. Now, we did get funding from the Indiana Finance Authority for water studies. Water studies are a big deal around the state right now with all the data centers and those things coming in. So we've got studies. We're putting in four stations as a result with that funding. So that's going to fund us for a couple of years for that. And then we've also got another station that the Johnson County Community Foundation has funded for us. And so we're going to put that down at Endress and Hauser in Greenwood. So five additional stations. We'll have 20 in our network by the end of 2026, hopefully. And so we're hoping the sky's the limit with this network. And so when you look at our data and our number of stations compared to stations around different states, we are severely lacking compared to those other states. And we're hoping that we can utilize those data because they're not only good for farming standpoint, they're good for forecasts. So better data, local data for your models, better forecasts. And then in addition to that, if there is a severe weather event, like a dust storm that happened up in northwestern Indiana this last year, we could have had data that could have led to a better warning system for that potential event. So better public safety as a result from that there as well. So, yeah, I'm hoping I sold it. But, it's a highly relevant, important network for the state of Indiana. And everyone, no matter who you are, you rely on the weather, and so that's a big thing that we're trying to help with across the state.
Well, yeah, even you mentioned the DNR buy-in. I mean, that's an aspect I hadn't even thought about. That data would be very critical for all of their operations as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've got groundwater monitoring wells across the state they're using, and it's good to have buy-in and support from sister agencies across the state.
Well, we've burnt through another hour and just scratched the surface of all the amazing things that the Indiana State Climate Office and the MRCC are doing. But we're going to have to wrap this session up. Austin, do you want to share a phone number for the Climate Office or an email if somebody has further questions or just really wants to get one of those Mesonet stations out there and has $35,000 ready to invest in one?
Yeah, so even if you don't have the money, we're looking for people to host the station, right? We need properties to put these stations on. And so if you're interested, you can email me directly. It's Pearson, PEARSONA, at purdue.edu. Or you can just go to Google and type in Indiana State Climate Office or MRCC, and you'll have contact forms that you can reach us at any time. You may not hear directly from me. You'll probably hear from Sam Lashley, our site host coordinator for those Mesonet stations. He's a retired National Weather Service person that is going to be joining. It is on our team, and we just found out last week that we are also hiring a part-time technician who was the radar technician for the National Weather Service Indianapolis office. He's going to help us expand the network there as well. So I think things are looking bright for us, and reach out if you'd like to collaborate.
Sounds great. Again, we really want to thank our guest this time, Austin Pearson, who's the assistant climatologist for the Indiana State Climate Office and works also with the Midwest Regional Climate Center there on Purdue's campus. And we just want to thank him again for his time and information for us here today.
Yep. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with Amy Webster, who is the Clinton County for Purdue Extension. She is the educator and county director. So we'll talk to her here in just a bit. When you